just change my ways. Change my ways. Those evil ways. So I set out across that way to strike them down, to make them pay and change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't evil
way. Welcome back. Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. And we have Fred in Iowa on the line. Go ahead, Fred.
Okay, I'll try to wind this up. I gather I know you understand. But that two-edged sword, it's the Word of God. That's the Bible. But if you're ignorant of the Bible, all the knowledge that you may gain, and my brother Chris, you give out the most pertinent knowledge and information that is helpful. But we need solutions. Answers, how to survive. And as much as RBN can be helpful and put out a lot of information, that's just shining a light on present truth. But when you understand the Word, the Bible, you'll understand prophecy. And prophecy foretells the future. So you can know the future. You will not know the day or the hour of the return of our Creator, but you can come pretty darn close to the season. And we're in that season right now, but you will never understand it until you start to comprehend and understand the Word and how to use that two-edged sword, which means we have to take our responsibility and our job to take the Bible the four corners of the earth. And the only reason I would have a firearm, because Brian puts out good information, it's about practicality, about how to work, how to understand things of fixing a car, planting a garden, the food you eat. I am mainly a vegetarian. I don't particularly want to kill animals, but if I escape to the mountains or cannot, and I'd like to live right up there in the Sac Valley, whatever it is, where you're be a neighbor to you, my friend. But in my little burg, which is just another Coeur d'Alene, Iowa, Idaho, but Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and this little town I live in, Iowa, are all over the United States. They're all over the world. Now, the more you understand, the more you trust, you will lose that fear. Other words, if you die, and you've got to be willing to die for the Word, the truth. But if you die for the truth, if you die for Christ, you'll be back on this earth where we will spend eternity. the new recreated earth. So it's hard to overcome anger, hatred, depression. But Christ died for everyone. Everyone. And that means the Hitlers, the Pol Pots, dictators, presidents. He died for everyone. But the price is we have to emulate the Creator, Christ, and be willing to give our life for that. Now, I will reiterate, I may sound like a fatalist, and I may sound like a coward, because I have the same struggle as everybody else. And the more knowledge you gain, it's easy to be full of fear. It's easy to have so much anger and frustration and depression. But put your reliance on the Creator, and you'll have peace at times. And don't fear the hardships you go through. And when things are so terrible, that's the time to thank our Creator the most. Because He cares for you so much. He's preparing you for these hard times ahead. And think about it, my brothers and sisters out there. And try to love. It's difficult. Easy for friends and family. But read Matthew chapter 10. You're going to find out who your enemies are, and it's going to break your heart. But grow in the faith, and then be a doer of it. And that's all for me, my brother. Unless you want to unpack it or yap on, I'm done. Okay?
All right. I appreciate it, bye, Fred. Bye. Much appreciated. I'm going to maybe just mention a couple of things and then circle back around and we'll connect some stuff. We're headed to, Brian keeps mentioning the clip, George Gordon, Wild and Free Pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp. We'll go to that in a second, but first, you know, sort of connecting dots or bridging discussions. I'm thinking of a few verses, especially, you know, what you were going through, Fred. So Romans 14, verse 5 in particular, one person, you know, when you're talking about arms in particular, and that whole discussion, one person regards one day above another, another regards every day alike. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind. And it really comes down to that, I would say. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind. John chapter 8, Jesus speaking, verse 31, so Jesus was saying to the Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. It's a four-part conditional statement. But, you know, what of all of this? Well, 1 Corinthians 13, the definitive love chapter, and 1 Corinthians 13 in particular, if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned but do not have love, it profits me nothing. And last but not least, I should probably hold this one after we play the clip, but it goes along, you know, this is the companion after the clip, I think, to sort of bridge all of these conversations. Galatians 2:4, it was because of the false brethren secretly brought in who had sneaked in to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, in order to bring us into bondage. I think of all of these things with these conversations. And so let's play the clip. We'll play this clip, The Wild and Free Pigs of the Okefenokee Swamp. Go ahead, please.
We have all sold ourselves into bondage. We have all voluntarily with the stroke of our own pens, because government made an offer, we made an acceptance, we signed on the dotted line, and we don't have rights at law, we have privileges and equity. And that's what the bottom line is. Let me digress now for a moment and tell you a little story. Some years ago, about 1900, an old trapper from North Dakota got in his Studebaker wagon, hitched up, took some of his possessions, especially his traps, and he went south. He stopped in a small town on the edge of the Okefenokee Swamp in Georgia. It was a Saturday morning, a lazy day, and he walked in about 8 o'clock, and sitting around the old potbelly stove were 7 or 8 of the town's citizens in the old general store. So he walked in and he said, "Gentlemen, could you direct me to the Okefenokee Swamp?" And some of the old-timers looked at him like he was crazy. He said, "You must be a stranger in these parts." And he said, "I am. I'm from North Dakota." And they said, "Man, in the Okefenokee Swamp are thousands of wild hogs. Why, a man who goes into the swamp by himself asks to die." And one of the guys lifted up his leg and he said, "I lost my leg here to the pigs of the swamp." And another old guy said, "Look at the cuts on me and look at my arm cut off. Why, those pigs have been free since the Revolution. Those pigs have been eating snakes and rooting out roots, and they've been fending for themselves for over 100 years. They're wild and they're free. You can't trap them, and no man dare go into the swamp by himself." And every man nodded his head in agreement. And the old trapper said, "Well, thank you so much for the warning. Now could you direct me to the swamp?" And they said, "Well, yeah, it's due south, straight down the road." And they importuned him not to go because they knew he'd never return. He said, "Sell me 10 sacks of corn and help me load it in the wagon." And they did. And the old trapper drove on down the road, never to be seen again. 2 weeks later, the old trapper came back into town, pulled up to the general store, got down off the wagon, walked in and bought 10 more sacks of corn. Ambled off down the road. 2 weeks later, he came back, loaded up 2 sacks of corn, and pretty soon he became a proverb in the little village. And people began to wonder what kind of demon or devil he had, that he could go into the swamp by himself at will without being consumed by the wild and the free hogs of the Okefenokee Swamp. And this went on for a month, and then 2 months, and finally 3 months. Every week or two, he would come into town on Saturday morning, and he'd load up 10 sacks of corn and amble off south into the swamp. One day he came in. Everyone thought he wanted more corn. He got off the wagon, he went in, took off his gloves, and he said, "Gentlemen, I need to hire about 10 or 15 wagons. I need 20 or 30 men. I have 6,000 hogs out in the swamp penned up, and they're all hungry, and I've got to get them to market right away." And they said, "You've what in the swamp?" He said, "I have 6,000 hogs penned up, and they haven't eaten for 2 or 3 days, and they'll starve if I don't get back there and feed them and take care of them." And one of the old-timers said, "Well, you mean you've captured the wild hogs of the Okefenokee?" And he said, "That's right." And they wanted to know, "Well, how did you do that? What did you do?" And one of them said, "I lost my arm." And another one said, "I lost my brother." Another one said, "I lost my leg to those wild boars." And he said, "Well, the first week I went in there, they were wild, all right, and they hid in the undergrowth. They wouldn't come out, and I dared not get off the wagon. So what I did was I spread the corn along behind the wagon. Every day I'd spread a sack of corn. The old pigs wouldn't have anything to do with it. But the young pigs decided that it was easier to eat free corn than it was to root out roots and catch snakes, and so the very young began to eat the corn first. I did this every day, and pretty soon, even the old pigs decided that it was easier to eat free corn. And after all, they were free, they were not penned up, they could run off in any direction they wanted at any time. So I said the next thing I needed to do was to get them used to eating in the same place all the time. So I selected a clearing, and I started putting the corn in the clearing. Well, at first they wouldn't come to the clearing. It was too far. And it was a nuisance to them. But the very young decided, yes, it's easier to take the free corn in the clearing than it is to go out and root out roots and catch their own snakes. And not long thereafter, the older pigs decided, well, yes, it is easier to go to the clearing every day. And so they learned to come to the clearing every day to get their free corn. And then they could subsidize their diet with roots and snakes and whatever else they wanted. And after all, they were all free. After all, they could run in any direction at any time. There were no bounds upon them. So I said the next step was to get them used to fence posts. So the next thing I did was I put fence posts all the way around the clearing. I put them in under the underbrush so that they wouldn't get suspicious, so that they wouldn't be nervous, so that they wouldn't be upset. After all, they were just sticks sticking up out of the ground like the trees and the brush, and the corn was there every day, and it was easy to walk in between the posts, get the corn, and walk back out. And this went on for a week or two, and shortly they became very used to just walking into the clearing, getting the free corn, and walking through the posts. The next step was to put one rail down at the bottom and to leave a few openings so that the older, fatter pigs could walk through the openings and the younger pigs could easily jump over just one rail. And after all, it was no real threat to their freedom nor their independence. After all, they could always jump over the rail and flee in any direction at any time. Now I decided that I wouldn't feed them every day. I began to feed them every other day. And on the days that I didn't feed them, they all gathered in the clearing and they squealed and they grunted and they begged and they pleaded with me to feed them. And so I fed them every other day. And I put a second rail around the posts. Now they became more and more desperate for food because now they were no longer used to going out and getting their own roots and finding their own food. They now needed me. They needed the corn every other day. So I trained them that I would feed them every day if they came in through the gates. And I put up a third rail around the fence. But it was still no great threat because there were several gates and they could run in and out at will. And then finally I put up the fourth rail. And then I closed all the gates but one. And then I fed them very well. And then yesterday I closed the gate. And today, I need you to help me take them to market. How do you trap an entire nation? How do you catch 230 million people and reduce them from free and independent to groveling, fat slaves? You give them social security and welfare and benefits. And you give them the PIC program and the farm program. Have we ever considered that maybe the farm program is the problem and not the solution?
The tale of the wild pigs was told to a barn full of farmers in Kearney, Nebraska in 1986 by George Gordon.
There you go. So it's not just Social Security, obviously. It's the whole concept. And this gets back to the alleged quote of Edward Mandel House, supposedly, in, you know, giving a more detailed account about how this will happen and how everyone will be subjugated. And from here, what we're going to end up doing is going back to Norman Dodd's intimation, because you can hear from what Norman Dodd said basically 100 years ago. You know, I'm talking about what resulted after the crash of 29. Based on his intimations, this is, as you know, has been discussed on this broadcast today and you know, previous on this network. This is stuff that has been in the works for a long time, and of particular interest to ne'er-do-wells in recent decades, in the past century or so, is the ability to really manipulate and control people. And, you know, Aldous Huxley's Ultimate Revolution speech is one that comes to mind. I think that was, what, 1962, I want to say. So we need to get back to Norman Dodd's, what he said in that interview with J. Edward Griffin back in 1982. And again, it's interesting that in that interview, Griffin said, the way he put it, where is that? He said there's quite a bit of publicity given to your conversation with Rowan Gaither. And so again, you know, just getting back to what's happened. I think it's good to be acquainted with history, our own in particular, and what John Adams said. And then again, you know, Romans 14 still, to me, is the operative concept. You know, you have to decide for yourself. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind. But how can you make an educated, informed decision if you don't even know the information? If you're not acquainted with it, you haven't had an opportunity to consider it thoughtfully. So, you know, before we go back to Norman Dodd, how about we go back to the exam, the 1895 or the eighth grade final exam from Salina, Kansas, circa 1895. I mentioned the grammar section. How about the arithmetic section? Those questions. Question number one, name and define the fundamental rules of arithmetic. Number two, short story problem. A wagon box is 2 feet deep, 10 feet long, 3 feet wide. How many bushels of wheat will it hold? Well, that's impractical for today's. Yeah, well, we could translate it to today's terms, and probably most folks would have the same difficulty calculating volume, essentially. Three, if a load of wheat weighs 3,942 pounds, what is it worth at 50 cents per bushel? deducting 1,050 pounds for tare. What? Wheat? Tare? What's... Anyway, so this is practical, substantive stuff, you know? This is reality. This is before the days of GMO. Question 4. District number 33 has a valuation of $35,000. What is the necessary levy to carry on a school 7 months at $50 per month and have $104 for incidentals? What? This is why I usually say, you know, when we this discussion arises, and when I, you know, think of the folks who said, well, I only made it through the eighth grade. But they could run a township with an eighth grade education. And in Thomas Jefferson's Bill for the More General Diffusion of Knowledge, this was, to me, what was in view when he said, you know, basically all you really need is 2 or 3 years worth of public education, if you will. That was, you know, before Horace Mann. And these are the essentials. This is, you know, this is important stuff. These are the real essentials, contrary to what Edward Bernays would have us believe in propaganda, those opening words. The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. No, these are the important elements in democratic society. People don't need to be manipulated. They just know how to. They need to know how to function as polite, courteous, respectful, thoughtful, considerate fellow citizens. Treat each other with dignity and respect. Not viciousness and, you know, again, Benjamin Franklin, only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters. What if they're being corrupted? Question 5. Find cost of 6,720 pounds of coal at $6 per ton. These are not difficult problems. Would we have difficulty? How many folks have difficulty counting change back these days? And don't even understand the concept of like value, because, you know, this stuff isn't money anyway. It's specious currency. Has no value. It has purchasing power. What? There's a difference? There's a distinction? So how many people don't count change back? You give somebody 2 20s, for example, and the, you know, it's $13 and however many cents. Do they count change back? Here's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Whatever, you know, it wouldn't be 2 20s, but $27, 2 20s, you know. Anyway, how many people do that these days as opposed to putting a bunch of paper in your hand and then sprinkling change? I mean, it's just astonishing. Yeah. Anyway, we'll continue on when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We have all sold ourselves into bondage. We have all voluntarily, with the stroke of our own pens, because government made an offer, we made an acceptance, we signed on the dotted line, and we don't have rights at law, we have privileges and equity. And that's what the bottom line is.
There you go. That's the bottom line. But who understands any of that language? Who understands? And, you know, Bruce Ray Riggs did a marvelous job of telling us exactly what had happened. Spelling it out very simply. What was I watching recently? An episode of Death Valley Days. Episode was that? Gosh, it escapes me. What was that titled? I don't want to waste too much time on this. I want to get to the Norman Dodd thing. There's an episode of Death Valley Days. Which one was it? The banking. Oh, gosh. And it'll come to me as soon as we start playing stuff, right? I find it real fast. Oh gosh, that's really annoying when that happens. You know, there's a clip The banking episode. Anyway. Yeah, I don't remember. So the clip, you know, they're talking about how banking works, and they say basically the paper is not money, which is interesting. I mean, we're still doing that, and people don't understand that concept these days. I'll find that episode. All right, so what I want to get to is the Norman Dodd interview. But first, just a couple more questions from the exam, the eighth grade final exam from 1895, circa 1895. Find the interest of $512.60 for 8 months and 18 days at 7%. How do you do that? The answer is a banking month is 30 days or 360 days per year. If the principal is held for 258 days, the proportional interest for the period held is 258 divided by 360 times $512.60 or $25.72. I'm going to skip ahead so that we can get on with the Norman Dodd clip. But question number 10, write a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt. This is grown-ups doing grown-up business at, you know, the eighth grade level, essentially. This is how I was raised by my father's mother, my grandmother on my dad's side in particular. She was world-class, amazing woman. And this is how we were raised to think. Pay attention. Versus what happens today, you know, the perpetually infantile neoteny that America is groomed increasingly into. I'm just making a contrast. So write a bank check, a promissory note, and a receipt. Eighth grade. All right, so the Norman Dodd interview, he talks about Roan Gaither, and that's a ways down. But, you know, listen to what Norman Dodd talks about in his banking experience. And that's part of the early... That's the early part of the interview. This is G. Edward Griffin's interview of Norman Dodd back in 1982. Go ahead, please.
The story you are about to hear represents a missing piece in the puzzle of modern history. Without this knowledge, many contemporary events are simply beyond understanding. You are about to hear a man tell you that the major tax-exempt foundations of this land, since at least 1945, have been operating to promote a hidden agenda. And that agenda has nothing to do with the surface appearance of charity, good works, or philanthropy. This man will tell you that the real objectives include the creation of a worldwide collectivist state, including the Soviet Union, which is to be ruled from behind the scenes by those same interests which now control the tax-exempt foundations. The man who tells this story is none other than Mr. Norman Dodd, who in 1954 was the staff director of the Congressional Special Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations, sometimes referred to as the Reese Committee, in recognition of its chairman, Congressman Carol Reese. The interview you are about to see was conducted by me in 1982. I had no immediate use for the material at that time, but I realized that Mr. Dodd's story was of extreme importance, and since he was advanced in age and not in good health, I simply wanted to capture his recollections on videotape while he was still with us. It was a wise decision because Mr. Dodd did pass away just a short time afterward. In recent months, there has been a resurgence of interest in the substance of Mr. Dodd's story, and we have decided to make it available to the general public. And so what now follows is the full, unedited interview, broken occasionally only for a tape change or to omit the sound of a passing airplane. It stands on its own as an important piece in the puzzle of modern history.
Mr. Dodd, let's begin this interview by a brief statement for the record, telling us who you are, what your background is, and your qualifications to speak on this subject.
Well, Mr. Griffin, as for who I am just, as the name implies, an individual born in New Jersey and educated in private schools, eventually in a school called Andover, Massachusetts, and then Yale University, and running through my whole period of being brought up and growing up, I have been an indefatigable reader, and I have had one major interest, and that was this country, as I was led to believe it was originally founded. And I entered the world of business knowing absolutely nothing about the how that world operated, and realized that the only way to find out what that world was consisted of would be to become part of it. And I then acquired some experience in the manufacturing world and then in the world of international communication, and finally chose banking as the field I wished to devote my life to. And I was fortunate enough to secure a position in one of the important banks in New York and lived there. I lived through the conditions which led up to what is known as the crash of 1929, and I witnessed what is tantamount to a collapse of the structure of the United States as a whole. And much to my surprise, I was confronted by my superiors with in the middle of the panic in which they were immersed, I was confronted with the question, "Norm, what do we do now?" I was 30 at the time, and I had no more right to have an answer to that question than the man in the moon. However, I did manage to say to my superiors, "Gentlemen, you take this experience as proof of something that you do not know about banking. And you better go find out what that something is and act accordingly." 4 days later, I was confronted by the same superiors with a statement to the effect that, "Norm, you go find out." And I really was fool enough to accept that assignment, because it meant that you were going out to search for something and nobody could tell you what you were looking for. But I felt so strongly on the subject that I consented to. I was relieved of all normal duties inside the bank, and 2.5 years later, I felt that it was possible to report back to those who had given me this assignment. And so I rendered such a report, and as a result of the report I rendered, I was told the following: "Norm, what you're saying is we should return to sound banking." And I said, "Yes, in essence, that's exactly what it is I'm saying." Whereupon I got my first shock, which was a statement from them to this effect: "We will never see sound banking in the United States again." And they cited chapter and verse to support that statement. And what they cited was as follows. Since the end of World War I, we have been responsible for the, what they call the institutionalizing of conflicting interests. And they are so prevalent inside this country that they can never be resolved. This came to me as an extraordinary shock because the men who made the statement were men who were deemed as the most prominent bankers in the country. The bank of which I was a part was spoken of as a Morgan bank. And coming from men of that caliber, a statement of that kind made a tremendous impression on me. And the type of impression that it made on me was I wondered if I, as an individual and it's what they call a junior officer of the bank, could, with the same enthusiasm, foster the progress and the policies of the bank. I spent about a year trying to think this out and came to the conclusion that I would have to resign. I did resign, and as a consequence of that, had this experience. When my letter of resignation reached the desk of the president of the bank, he sent for me, and I came to visit with him, and he stated to me, "Norm, I have your letter, but I don't believe you understand what's happened in the last 10 days. And I said, "No, Mr. Cochran, I have no idea what's happened." "Well," he said, "the directors have never been able to get your report to them out of their mind, and as a result, they have decided that you, as an individual, must begin at once, and you must reorganize this bank in keeping with your own ideas." And he then said, "Now, can I tear up your letter?" And inasmuch as what had been said to me was offering me, at the age of, by then, 33, about as fine an opportunity for service to the country as I could imagine, I said yes. And they said they wished me to begin at once. And I did, and suddenly, in the span of about 6 weeks, I was not permitted to do another piece of work. And every time I brought the subject up, I was kind of patted on the back and said, and told, "Stop worrying about it, Norm. Pretty soon you'll be a vice president, and then you will have quite a handsome salary and ultimately be able to retire on a very worthwhile pension. In the meantime, you can play golf and tennis to your heart's content on weekends." Well, Mr. Griffin, I found I couldn't do it. I spent a year with my, figuratively, with my feet on the desk doing nothing, and I just couldn't adjust to it. So I did resign. And this time, my resignation stuck, and then I got my second shock, which was the discovery that the doors of every bank in the United States were closed to me, and I never could get a job, as it were, in a bank. So I found myself, for the first time since I'd graduated from college, out of a job. And from there on, I followed various branches of the financial world, ranging from investment counsel to membership of the stock exchange, and finally ended up as an advisor to a few individuals who had capital funds to look after. In the meantime, my major interest became very specific, which was to endeavor, by some means, of getting the educational world to actually, you might say, teach the subject of economics realistically and move it away from the support of various speculative activities that characterize our country.
That's a fascinating interview, wouldn't you say? D. Edward Griffin interviewing Norman Dodd, you know, on the Reese Committee as a sort of backdrop of the interview, that interview back in 1982. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Somewhat of a travesty, but we're going to skip ahead in the interview to the 18-minute mark to get Norman Dodd's remarks on Horace Rowan Gaither Jr. and kind of power and influence some folks wield. Go ahead, please.
There's quite a bit of publicity given to your conversation with Rowan Gaither. Would you please tell us who he was and what was that conversation you had with him?
Raymond Gaither was at that time president of the Ford Foundation. And Mr. Gaither had sent for me when I found it convenient to be in New York, asked me to call upon him at his office, which I did. And on arrival, after a few amenities, Mr. Gaither said, "Mr. Dodd, we've asked you to come up here today because we thought that possibly, off the record, you would tell us why the Congress is interested in the activities of foundations such as ourselves." And before I could think of how I would reply to that statement, Mr. Gaither then went on voluntarily and stated, he said, "Mr. Dodd, all of us that have a hand in the making of policies here have had experience either with the OSS during the war or the European Economic Administration after the war. We've had experience operating under directives, and these directives emanate and did emanate from the White House. Now we still operate under just such directives. Would you like to know what the substance of these directives is?" And I said, "Yes, Mr. Gaither, I'd like very much to know." Whereupon he made this statement to me, namely, "Mr. Dodd, we are here operate on similar directives, the substance of which is that we shall use our grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union." Well, parenthetically...
We should play more of that. Maybe we'll play it tomorrow. I mean, that's... This is what's been happening in this country and around the world for, well, obviously... many decades. That was the what came from the Reese Committee investigation back in the 1950s. And a companion piece to this, I would say, is Gary Allen's Rockefeller File, published in 1976. Chapter 4 in particular, Profit Times Philanthropy Equals Power. Larry McDonald, Congressman Larry McDonald, wrote the foreword in 1975 to Gary Allen's Rockefeller File. You remember Congressman Larry McDonald? Da 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 da. Shot down on Flight 007. An excerpt. "The Rockefellers invented a scheme used by the super rich today whereby the more money and more money you appear to give away, the richer and more powerful you become." That's what I think of when George Soros gives away $18 billion. That'll do it for today's broadcast. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.